You're listening to the CEO Series with Carl Moore on the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
Welcome to the CEO Series. I'm Carl Moore from McGill University. Each week, the CEO Series takes you inside the minds and lives of some of Canada, and indeed the world's top leaders, to discuss strategy, leadership, and today's pressing business issues. Some of the world's top leaders have spent time with us. Justin Trudeau, Mohamed Yunus, Nobel Peace Prize winner, and Joanne Liu, International President of Doctors Without Borders. This show gives you a thin, well, perhaps not so thin slice of the kind of thoughtful leaders leading some of today's most successful organizations. Today, I'm delighted to be speaking with John McCall McBain, the new Chancellor of McGill University. John, thank you for joining us today.
Thanks, Carl. I'm very glad to be here.
John, tell us about your early years. Where did you grow up and what did your family do?
So I grew up in a small town in Niagara Falls, Canada, right on the border, a big tourist town. When I was very young, it actually had more hotel rooms in Niagara Falls than New York City. And so I grew up there, went to public high school, Orchard Park Public Schools, Prince Philip Senior Public School, and then A. N. Meyer Secondary School for high school before coming to McGill.
So what was your family up to?
So my mother was a school teacher. She actually taught one of the engineers in grade two, who actually is one of the people that figured out how to get Apollo 13 back to Earth. So it's sort of a small thing. And my father was a small town lawyer, and in the 80-84 Canadian government, he was a member of parliament for 4 years.
Wow. It's interesting that you were a small town, Niagara Falls. You would think maybe Brock or McMaster or U of T would be kind of, I grew up in Toronto, that's kind of the world. Why McGill? How did you come to McGill?
So I guess I've always been a bit of a contrarian. Everybody else, as you said, was going to, you know, Western, Queens, etc. from my hometown, Brock. And so I decided I liked Montreal. I've been to Montreal a few times. I liked Montreal. Wanted to prove my French. And McGill's a great university, so I thought I'd go there. And nobody from my high school went there. Only one other person from my hometown went to McGill. But we're trying to encourage more and more to go now.
So clearly you're a leader today, John, in terms of what you've accomplished. When did you first see yourself as a leader?
Well, it's interesting, Carl. I've had a lot of failures in my life. Everybody thinks, oh, John was very successful, but I actually have had a lot of failures. And one of my early failures was I always wanted to be a swimming instructor and work for the city of Niagara Falls in the summer. And so when I was 17, I became a swimming instructor in March, and in April I was hired for the city of Niagara Falls for the summer job, July, August, to be a swimming instructor. But then I was good in Spanish. I won the Spanish contest and was going to go to Ottawa for the first week of July. So I would have missed the first week of teaching. So I went to the city of Niagara Falls. I said, look, you know, I'd like to have one of the other 20 students hasn't got a job yet from instructors take that week and I'll take the other 7 weeks. They said, no, you're fired. So my first business experience was I started a competitor to the city of Niagara Falls. And I went around to people's pools and signed an agreement saying anything happens to your pool is my fault. I had a $1 million liability policy. And I hired instructors and taught in other people's pools and gave their kids free lessons. And it turned out to be a big business. Actually, main reason, scholarship from McGill, but also the earnings from that paid my way through McGill. And so that's how I started. I started there as an entrepreneur. And I guess the second failure I had was when I was in grade 11, I was a wrestler and I won Southern Ontario. And then I went against a guy who was actually a Canadian Olympian, but also won the gold medal in the Commonwealth game, Ray Takahashi. And I lost him at the All Ontario. And because of that, I switched into student politics and I became president of the Student Society of my high school, A. N. Meyer, in my 13th year.
So it's interesting because you've been an entrepreneur. I've always been a corporate type, IBM, Hitachi, Oxford, McGill. What's the difference between the heart and the mind of the entrepreneur like yourself and most of us who are more corporate or organizational types? What's the difference?
Well, you know, we need all types of people in the world, so I don't want to be judgmental, but the thinking of an entrepreneur is more, how can I do it? A lot of resilience and never giving up. And I think sometimes the more corporate mentality is not how can I do it, but how can I explain it? So there's a bit of a difference. And, you know, in my life, I have a lot of ups and downs, but I think this sort of perseverance is how we can do it, and not can we do it, it's how can we do it. I think that's sort of the main difference, because we're always trying to do new things.
What did you study at McGill?
I studied economics at McGill. Actually, I started my first year in the joint honors of political science and economics. And the second year, I just concentrated just on the honors of economics. It was a three-year program because at that time we had Ontario grade 13. And so I entered. I remember my first year, the SAGEP students were way ahead of us. They'd already had economics. I'd never had economics before. So it was quite a challenge, but I really enjoyed the program, and it was a great program, McGill.
You're listening to the CEO Series. I'm Carl Moore from McGill University, and today I'm speaking with John McCall McBain, the new chancellor of McGill University. This is a self-serving question as a McGill professor, but do you still use some of those ideas that you learned a number of years ago in economics? Was that helpful in your career?
You know, I think it was. I think the theory of the firm, microeconomics, probably more helpful. Understanding the world and macroeconomics is important, but in business, I think the microeconomics was very important. And I think some of the leadership experience I had as well at McGill were important. But yes, I think that was knowledge of how the economy works and how firms work was very important.
Someone I was talking to this week, and I mentioned I was talking to you, said that they told a story that when you were president as an undergrad, that you had the chutzpah to phone up the chancellor and just say, I'd like to sit down with you.
Actually, I did that with, I learned this when I was president of my high school. We had a very domineering principal, and I was representing the students, and I always thought that the student leaders have to be equal to the administration. So they have to, look at each other and speak as peers, not as superior and subordinate, because that's the relationship, in a school as you're a student and teacher. But I thought that as a student representative, I had to equally, and I'll never forget the high school. We were doing something, student council, and the principal didn't like it. And I was in the hall, and the students are walking by, and this principal was just going like this and yelling at me. And I just turned and pushed the water fountain, had a little drink of water, and just sort of. And we had to deal with us on an equal level. And so I thought that, and I think McGill does it very well. We have student representatives on the board and the Senate. So when I was there, I immediately, when I was chosen, I reached out to the new principal, it was David Johnston, the chancellor, the Alan Gold, who was a chairman of the Board of Governors, a great person, and some of the senior governors, and I had lunch with them or met with them for coffee, and say, look, we want to, here's the students' views. And I found that a lot of the link between McGill students is actually very close to alumni and also very close to some of the outside directors of the university, because we really want what's best for students, and they remember when they were a student. So that was very effective, and I thought it made the students get the equal respect as opposed to be seeing as a student. They had to look at us as an equal member of the Board of Governors, for example.
You're listening to the CEO Series. And today we're sitting down with John McCall McBain, the new chancellor of McGill University. The Rhodes Scholar is probably the greatest honor a young person can get. Like, Nobel Prize is a much greater honor, but you get it later in life, in your 60s or 70s. It's a great young honor. I taught a lot of Rhodes when I was at Oxford. How did you have the chutzpah to apply for the Rhodes? Did someone encourage you, or did it come to your mind itself?
Yes, I didn't know much about the Rhodes Scholarship, and it was David Johnston, the principal of the university, who said, look, John, you should apply for this. And so I did, and I was very fortunate to win. My year, that we had three McGillians who won that year. There's two chosen from Quebec and one from New Brunswick, but they're all going to McGill. There was Matthew Jocelyn from New Brunswick, who's a senior person in the theater world, in France and also in Canada. Mark Tessier-Levine, who's now president of Stanford University, and myself, we were the three Rhodes Scholars. Mark and I were the two from Quebec that year.
Very impressive group. So this, and then you went on to do an MBA at Harvard. So
I did law at Oxford.
Yeah.
And then did an MBA at Harvard, yes.
So here, this is almost an exam question, John, for you. Compare and contrast McGill, Oxford, and Harvard, three great universities, quite different. Compare and contrast them for us.
So, they are great universities, and they are different, though. And I guess, so starting maybe with McGill, for me, McGill was the three words remind me of my student years were independence, very independent thinking. Secondly was the diversity of choices and leadership positions. So when I was at McGill, I was encouraged to help on Welcome Week, so I became president of Welcome Week, and then I became president of Winter Carnival, and then was president of the university, McGill Student Society. And I think McGill, for me, was a chance to take a bigger role in leadership, and that's what I learned. And secondly, a basis for how the economy works for my economic studies. But it was very important, the leadership. And when I'm encouraging students to go to McGill, I say, look at the clubs, look at the interest groups. There is an interest group for everything, both athletic, cultural, all the interests you could, game, anything you want. And that was really important. So this, that showing that there's an interest for you, there's many things in the world, but you can sort of choose one of them. And McGill's got all those choices, was very important. So I think McGill, for me, was really leadership and a strong foundation. Oxford, I would say, was thinking. You really learn to think at Oxford. They have a tutorial system, and I had some very senior tutors. I had a lot of students who are studying international law read Ian Brownlee's book. Well, Ian Brownlee was my tutor. So it was time with two or three students, or one, two or three students in a time with very senior professors, one-on-one, and you do an essay each week. I think that was quite inspiring. It made you really think about things. So I think doing the law degree at Oxford was very helpful for me to learn how to think. Less practical, but learning how to think. Harvard Business School was very different. I'd say it was less academic, less broad than obviously McGill or than Oxford. But it was fairly simple. I think the biggest thing I learned, I mean, I think marketing was very important and finance. But the one thing I learned, I'll never forget the Carrefour case. Carrefour is a big supermarket chain and not, you know, based like a Walmart in France, one of the early ones in the world. And what I learned there is cash flow, because it used to be that all the small French stores would have, you know, they'd sell their goods every 120 days. So the payment terms for the suppliers is 120 days. But when you can turn your inventory faster, like in 30 days, you know, Carrefour received 90 days of free credit from their suppliers, which was, I thought, really interesting. That was one of the cases I remember. So specific cases like that, learning how to finance. So when I went out on my own, became an entrepreneur, I was able to borrow money, and understanding how to finance a business was quite important. So I think those are the three, the way I conjure. All great universities. I mean, it's clear that one advantage McGill has is Montreal. None of the other cities even compare. Boston's a nice city, but, you know, not on the par of McGill and being such a cosmopolitan city. So I think that's one thing that is different. You know, if you had to live somewhere, obviously you'd live in Montreal as opposed to the other two places.
Today, I'm delighted speaking with John McCall McBain, the Chancellor of McGill University. When we come up, we'll talk about the John McCall McBain Scholarship Program here at McGill. I'm Carl Moore from McGill University, and you're listening to the CO Series.
Top-notch insight from proven leaders. This is the CEO Series with Carl Moore on the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
Hello again, I'm Carl Moore from McGill University, and you're listening to the CEO Series. We're speaking today with John McCall McBain, the Chancellor of McGill University. McCall McBain, was that the name you were born with?
No, actually, my name is McBain. I was born as John McBain, John Howard McBain. My mother was maiden name was Kennedy, no relation. Sort of some Irish, maybe English stock. My father's more Scottish background. But when my wife and I married, we were sort of thinking about what name we wanted, and we decided that we'd put the names together for the kids and for ourselves. So I took her name and she took my name. She was a daughter of three farmers' daughters, so the name of the family was going to go away. So we thought it was a nice idea. So I became McCall McBain officially, and she became from Marcy McCall to Marcy McCall McBain. And when I travel now, everybody says, Mr. McCall. And I used to say, no, it's McCall McBain. But now I just sort of say, that's fine. So it is officially McCall McBain. So I took my wife's name. We think it's a very egalitarian thing to do.
I've never heard of anyone doing it. Have you ever ran into anyone else that's done that?
I think some people in Spain do that, take two names. Some people do it for their children. But we thought it was a good idea. And it was allowed in Switzerland. We wouldn't be able to do it in Switzerland, but because we were Canadian, it was allowed in Canada. We were able to do it. I'm not even sure you can do it in Quebec, but we were able to do it.
So, John, you've been helping student scholarships for decades now. What's the latest thinking in your mind about how to more effectively provide scholarships to students and even find the students, the best students?
So look, we've been looking at scholarship for a long time now, over a decade. And before, scholarships were viewed as sort of, oh, you're giving to a scholarship, you give the money and you see what happens. And we've hired a president of our foundation, Franca Giucardi, who used to work for the Lorand Foundation, Lorand Scholarships, and has really looked at scholarship as a business and said, look, you know, how do we get the best scholarship? And the big error in scholarship, let's say, Carl, you and I get in a room and two of your professors get in another room, or a business person and one of your professors get in another room. We take 10 students through, we give you criteria, and pretty well there'll be, and we say choose three, for example, and there'll be overlap. You'll choose two, and your fourth student will be, you'll choose three, and a fourth student you just didn't choose was the one they chose, and they'll choose the two. So our first big sort of insight is what we call type two errors, which are errors made outside the realm of the what you're really looking at. So the problem isn't the interview process itself, and there's a lot of work we do on that, how it makes students feel comfortable, and I'll go over that. But the big thing first is, are the right people in the room? So we could choose the right scholars, but the problem is the winners really weren't in the room. And there's two reasons for that. The second reason, I'll give it first, the second reason is that the student's paper or, you know, internet application wasn't a very good application, so they didn't bring out and didn't know how. They had no experience, no social capital of how to prepare a scholarship application. So, you know, we'd get a scholarship application from a student from University of Northern British Columbia who was a great student, but they may not get the interview versus a student at Harvard because the student at Harvard's had a lot of help in their application. So first thing we did with the McCombie Scholarship at McGill is we went around to every university, 63 different meetings across Canada, and said, look, here's, you know, we're doing this scholarship, try to help your students. A, find the students, but B, help them to produce applications. So that's one of the reasons they don't get the interview and hence they're not in the room. But the bigger reason is we don't reach out to the wider community. So there's kids that, you know, their parents had heard about this and they tell them about a scholarship, ours or Rhodes Scholarship, and they apply. Or kids like me, it happened, the principal told me, but we're trying to get the professor, so we're trying to reach deep to get a deeper selection and a more, both a deeper selection, looking deeper in the community, but also much more diverse selection, so that people who traditionally wouldn't have applied to a scholarship, didn't think it was for them, we're giving them confidence, saying, no, you should apply too, we're looking for people like you, and to get the students, but all other students, alumni from the university who've won the scholarship to talk to them, but also professors and other administrators of the university to really reach deep and try to encourage people, non-traditional candidates, to apply.
You're listening to the CO Series. And today we're sitting down with John McCall McBain, the new chancellor of McGill University. John, so with the scholarships this year, where in Canada do the students generally come from?
So in the McCall McBain Scholarship at McGill this year, we have 20 students from across Canada, very diverse group. We have three from McGill, two from U of T, two from Dalhousie, and two from UBC. But, you know, the rest are individual universities across Canada, from University of Manitoba, or University of Winnipeg, actually, to Wilfrid Laurier, to we have students from University of Montreal. We have a student from, you know, tons of different universities across Canada, Western. So it was very diverse. So we weren't just looking for a few students. We really spent a lot of time and efforts to have sessions across, we had, I think, over 60 sessions of students, both online and but also in person, to meet students, say, here's what the scholarship is about, we encourage you to apply. And so we were able to reach deeper in the community. And, you know, a lot of big scholarships, the Rhodes included, are there, and you know, and the traditional candidates will apply, and we're spending a lot of money and time reaching out. And that's good for McGill as well, because, you know, I remember, I'll never forget when we announced the scholarship and we're having lunch and everybody's talking about it, and the Dean of Graduate Studies came up to me and she really understood this idea, we're gonna go out and really try to seek the best students. And she realized that we're offering 20 scholarships a year from Canada, and another 10 internationally starting in 2023. But she said, I want your losers. And what she meant is, you've got such a big effort to reach out to students that the students you're getting, yes, 20 are great and winning, but there's also another 15, 20 who are also great, but, you know, for whatever reason, didn't win. Doesn't mean they weren't great. So I think that shows that the working really hard on selection, and for a public university like Canada. So what we did in our scholarships is we have the 20 winners, but McGill said it's so important, the people you're bringing in, that the finalists also get from McGill $10,000 a year for the first year to come to McGill. So we got about 2/3 of people who are finalists who didn't win the scholarship to also come to McGill. And then even the regional finalists, we give them $5,000 for each of them to go to a university in Canada. So it's also good for University of Canada. Let's have our students apply. Even if they don't win the scholarship, they might become a finalist and go to McGill. Or even if they don't that, they might get some money and then be able to go to their own university.
So they're just graduate students?
These are only, right, the students who've done it, the requirements are you must have done an undergraduate degree, and you can study a, you know, master's or professional degree at McGill. So dentistry, law, medicine, or also, you know, Master of Arts, Master of Science, Master of Engineering.
An MBA.
An MBA, of course. Of course, yes. Interestingly enough, Carl, our first class, we were surprised. We got five lawyers, five people in the law faculty, and we had two or three go into engineering, which is very good, and then others in a variety of subjects. This year, we didn't get any winners who were MBA students. We're hoping, of course, for the future we will.
You're listening to the CO Series. I'm Carl Moore from McGill University, and today I'm speaking with John McCall McBain, the new chancellor of McGill University. The plan is to keep in touch with these people for their lives and just make that like the Rhodes, where there's kind of a society that they help and strengthen each other. So diversity is baked into the program you're doing. So there would be Indigenous people and Black people and so on, that it would be part of the process for sure.
Right. So we don't specify anything up front. We're saying we want the best students who meet the criteria. But the best students, an interesting thing. So, you know, what we're trying to do is we want the best students so they're, you know, very helpful when they're 45 in the world, they're leaders, right? So it's very hard to take a moment in time and look at it. It's sort of like the Olympics where, you know, if you're at the end of the line and you're seeing who gets across the line first, what you don't see is when you look back that actually somebody started in the 30-yard line and somebody started 30-meter line, and somebody started 30 meters behind the start thing. So we have to look at what's two questions. What is the speed at which they're crossing the finish line? Even they're crossing it second,
yeah,
because they started from so far back. So they've, you know, they've had much more progress and actually doing better than the other at that time. And secondly, given the progress they're making, where will they be, where they project to be when they're 35 to 55? So we're looking at that. It's too easy to get a resume that looks great, and, you know, the person did 2 weeks in Ghana and 2 weeks working for the World Health Organization and all these things, which may have been set up all by their parents and may not be initiative, versus another student who had to work to support their family. So we take those issues into account and say, you know, given this situation, where, you know, what is that student really, you know, what are they in and of themselves opposed to their family background? So it's not against or for any background. It's trying to say we need to find out, projecting that student's life, where they'll be from 35 to 40. So looking, first of all, at the speed they're crossing the finish line,
yeah,
because they might have started farther back, but they've come and are speeding up. And secondly, you know, where that will project them to be in the future. And it's tough doing it. So we have full training. We had 130 volunteers across Canada, some very well-known Canadians joined our group, very diverse group of Canadians chose the thing. So one of the ways to get a diverse group of students is to have a diverse group of choosers. So we had Indigenous Canadians, Canadians from all sectors sitting down together and having to make choices. And there were, and even the, it was interesting, some of the fairly traditional business people who were choosers working with people they wouldn't usually meet found that they were able to choose better candidates that way. And so we had a very diverse group. We're very, very happy with the Macomb Bain Scholars at McGill, the first class. And you know, I'm hoping that the future class will be that way. But it all starts with going deep in the community. So we're reaching through community associations to encourage them, because the students aren't just ones that graduated just yesterday from undergraduate. They could have graduated a few years before, so we don't have an age limit. So we're trying to seek very widely.
We're speaking with John McCall McBain, the Chancellor of McGill University. Up next, we're talking about what does a Chancellor actually do? I'm Carl Moore from McGill University, and you're listening to the CO Series.
Exclusive access to some of the most successful leaders out there. This is the CEO Series with Carl Moore on the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
Hello again, I'm Carl Moore from McGill University, and you're listening to the CEO Series. We're sitting down today with John McCall McBain, the brand new Chancellor of McGill University. So John, when I think about a business, you have the Provost as the Chief Operating Officer, the Principal as the CEO, the Chair of the Board is the Chair of the Board, is similar to a board. What does a Chancellor fit in that model, or what is a Chancellor?
So you know, Carl, it's interesting. You made that model. I was actually going to answer the same thing. So, you know, I'm traditionally, you know, I understand how business works. So one of the things that you learn in business right away is line of authority. So as Chancellor, the role is a little different from a traditional business. So at McGill, they have a Board of Governors, of which I'm a part of that. I sit on the Board of Governors as Chancellor, ex officio. But there's a Chair of the Board of Governors, as there's a Chair in the business. And as you say, the Principal is the Chief Executive Officer and the Provost is the Chief Operating Officer. So I understand that line of authority. The Chancellor is an interesting role, and it's sort of particularly to a university. And I view it as, you know, there's several things. Number one really is there is a ceremonial sort of official role, which a bit like the Governor General in some ways.
Yeah.
There's a role where you're the one that officially gives the diplomas and the awards to students. So there's a role at convocations, etc. And secondly, I guess there's a role of you're representing the university, and it helps that sometimes you can go if the principal is busy, etc. So you can, you know, meet alumni, meet potential donors, have a ceremonial and a vision role for the university in that way, and being able, one of the people who can express the vision of McGill University as a public university. And then thirdly, I think is a sort of, you're a chief spokesperson, sort of, not chief spokesperson, chief sort of cheerleader for the university as well. And in that way, you also become an advisor. So, you know, I'll be talking more discreetly to the principal and to the chairman of the Board of Governors, other governors, about, you know, trying to make sure that, you know, McGill stays competitive in the world and is a first-class university. And my two sort of areas I'm, you know, most concerned about for the university are, number one is students. I was as president of student senate, probably the, I don't know if in the first, but one of the chancellors who were at McGill's, who was a former student council president. So I want to be very close to student council and their views and students themselves and what's good for students at McGill. And secondly, I think McGill's work on sustainability is very important.
It strikes me, John, you're an entrepreneur. The role of the chancellor in some ways is very specific. You give the degrees and that's great, you know, responsibility. But it just strikes me is that there's room for you to create the role that you want. Now you talk to the principal about it and the provost and the chair of the board to get their advice. But it just strikes me is that as an entrepreneur, it's an unpainted canvas, which you can decide what you paint. Is that a fair way of looking at it?
I think it is. So one of the things I'm, but the chancellor's not an executive role, which I'm used to. So I have to be a little cautious. So in the cautious side of me and being advised to be a little more cautious, I am sort of, you know, in my mind working on several things I'd like to do in the role. I mentioned two.
Yep.
One was, you know, making sure the student experience is good and being close to students. And number two is sustainability for the university. And I think I want to take my first 6 months to sort of listen and learn. And then from there, in the three-year mandate, to develop more ideas for what I should do as chancellor. But I want to make sure, A, it's consistent with, you know, what the university is trying to do and how I can more amplify the good things the university, as opposed to, you know, creating substreams that are really not the university's interest, but are my interest. So I have to be a little careful of that.
You're listening to the CO Series. And today we're sitting down with John McCall McBain, the new chancellor of McGill University. Putting Marcy to the side, you have a boss now. Like in one sense, you do, but you don't. Because you've got to go to, you rightly will go to the principal and say, I'm thinking about this, ma'am. What do you think? So it's interesting because as the entrepreneur, you've been the boss and you have a spouse. And so you know, you work with her very closely. But it'll be interesting because you're going to have to occasionally go, I just can't do this for the right reasons. But, you know, you're used to being the boss.
Right. Yeah, I'm used to being the boss. And this is not the, quote, boss role, as you say. But at the same time, I'm also always been, you know, fairly good at listening to my advisors. So though I'm the boss, so here I'm switching the roles. I'm saying now I'm in the advisor role. I think that what's interesting, which is almost a good training ground actually for a chancellor, is I was chairman of the Principal's International Advisory Board. And the third letter if you're in that is advisory. So with that role, I worked with the principal and we gave her advice. We gave her advice on many areas, including the libraries, for example. And that was very effective. I worked with Morris Fish, former Supreme Court of Canada judges, on, you know, how to help give advice to the principal on that. And that was one area we worked on. And we're working with the principal, for example, on residences, helping with that. So these are advisory roles, but I think that, you know, an advisor, they're not always going to listen because maybe they do listen 100%, but they've got other parties they got to look
at. Sure.
But I think it was interesting. So I got used to with Suzanne Fortier to work with her on an advisory role, because I've started that as the chairman of the, and I was on the Princeton National Advisory Board before and then became chairman. So I think those 4, 5, 7 years, whatever it was, on the advisory board gave me some, you know.
So you've learned those skills.
I've learned the skills of being an advisor, which I probably didn't have naturally. And also what's interesting is Suzanne and I think, have a very good relationship, and also with Ram Pandu, who's great, who's the chairman of the board. But it's interesting, Suzanne and I, for McGill, we only speak French together. We've never really spoken English together, which is sort of interesting.
So your French is pretty good.
Yes.
Well, you live in Switzerland.
I live in Switzerland.
Lived in Paris for a while.
I left Montreal in 92 and actually moved to Paris. I lived in Paris. We read Les Hôtels des Particuliers in Paris. I lived in Paris 92 to 98, and now I live in Switzerland. So,
do you have a Parisian or a Swiss French accent?
Well, I don't have a Swiss accent. It's very slow, but I probably have between a Quebec and a French accent, and maybe a little bit of my Anglophone Ontario background.
Do you ever think in French?
I do. In certain words, I mix up sometimes and use the French word. But I think it depends what I'm in. Some business situation, because I did most of my business in French, I would think in French.
You're listening to the CO Series. I'm Carl Moore from McGill University. And today I'm speaking with John McCall McBain, the new chancellor of McGill University. It's the early days now, but is it cool being a chancellor? Like, do people kind of light up and go, that's really cool?
If they're lighting up, it's only on Zoom right now.
Yeah, okay.
So, I think we're hoping to have the November graduation. There's talk of it maybe being in person. So I'm looking forward to that. You know, I think it's a role that I'm really supporting McGill. So I think I don't view it as a role for me. It's really a role of supporting McGill.
So at least one of your kids went to McGill.
My daughter, Alexandra. Alexandra McBain went to McGill. She was a McGill law graduate. She graduated a few years ago in law school.
So where is she living?
My daughter lives in Montreal now.
Okay, so you'll be in Montreal a fair bit of the year.
A fair bit, right. So what's nice about one of the fortunate realization we've had after COVID is you can do things through Zoom. So, you know, I have 5 children, 2 smaller ones living with us in Geneva. So, you know, I will do some things by Zoom or by, you know, a video conference, which is good. So I will obviously come to McGill quite often, Montreal quite often, and obviously for McGill, but also to see my daughter and future grandchild, granddaughter. I think that, you know, I will be able to do, I think my role as chancellor will be more effective having people understood Zoom and being more comfortable with video conferencing and Zoom than they were before. So I'll be able to do some of the meetings by Zoom, which I, you know, would have been unable to attend or have to attend by phone.
If you think 2 years ago, we would have said, no, you can't. But today you go, of course you can. The world's changed.
Yeah, no, it's interesting.
It's unbelievable.
The fact I live in Geneva is, you know, obviously I will be coming a lot to McGill, yeah. And it's a commitment to come to Montreal, which I love to come to Montreal. But at the same time, it's something that I can really be involved, maybe more involved than somebody even lives in Toronto. Although Michael was very good at, you know, coming, yeah. So he was exemplary. But at least I'll be able to attend as many things as a person from Toronto, but I would maybe attend half of them via Zoom.
Today I'm delighted to be speaking with John McCall McBain, the new chancellor of McGill University. Next up, we'll talk about John's personality as an introvert or more of an extrovert, and what he's passionate about. I'm Carl Moore from McGill University, and you're listening to the CEO Series.
They made it, and they're telling you how. You're listening to the CEO Series with Carl Moore on the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
Hello again, I'm Carl Moore from McGill University, and you're listening to the CEO Series. We're sitting down today with John McCall McBain, the brand new chancellor of McGill University. So are you more of an introvert or extrovert?
I'm an extrovert, no question.
No question in your
mind?
No
question. So that's very... I'm definitely an extrovert. I try to take time sometimes to be a good listener as well. And I think maybe my time at the Princess International Advisory Board has helped on that. Because I've, you know, usually been the instigator of things, I've learned that, you know, it's good to take in other advice. And I have, on a personal level, we have obviously a foundation board. We've got the McCall McBain Scholarship McGill board. So we have, you know, other advisors, and I have an investment committee board. I have actually a group of senior advisors. So I'm quite well advised. But
you, as an extrovert, you're going to learn to listen more and not always be the center. You've learned to step back over time.
I probably haven't learned perfectly, but I'm starting to learn that. And I'm sure the chancellor role will allow me to learn that a little bit.
Is your wife an introvert or extrovert?
She's probably between the two.
More an ambivert then.
More ambivert, yes. Or,
there we are.
Yeah. Not a total introvert, but not a total extrovert either. But she's quite an extrovert.
John, what's your passion? When did you realize it, and has it evolved?
So, I mean, in three areas. So on the sort of career professional side, I am a consummate entrepreneur. I, you know, always thinking of new ideas and new things. I told my team when we were talking earlier about when we saw COVID, we said adventure sports. We also, iconic assets, told my team, we've got to buy the Eiffel Tower. That's just, you know, and actually, so, you know, we got to, you know, buy the CN Tower. Yeah. These are things that are going to be there for a long time. And, you know, it will come out hopefully in the next few months. We did actually buy into not one of those, but a fairly iconic asset. So we think that, I'm always looking at new ideas. So I think one of my passions is entrepreneurship. And secondly, taking ideas and working on a term sheet to work with other people to either purchase or partnership. So, you know, if you take Willie, the 3 Gassendella brothers, yeah, and their mother, who was about 83, they saw things, you know, they saw COVID, and they said, you know, maybe they have potential to build a business. So we were able to come in, never had a partner outside a family member. There was another family before, but outside a family member since 1906. And they said, no, you know, we can work with these people and invest with them because they're entrepreneurs, but they're thinking like owners. And we always said, you know, what would I like as an owner? I'd like to have somebody that doesn't bother me but could provide advice and isn't going to force me to sell the business someday, yeah, or to go public. So we've done an arrangement with them and with other businesses where, you know, we can have a much longer term work with them. So we're hoping to work long term with them. And I think that, so I think my first passion is entrepreneurship, and second, later is making term sheets, deals, deal making on that to, you know, acquire businesses or invest in businesses. So I'm quite good at that, and that's what I spend most of my time on, to be honest with you. Other passion is really the family. I've got five children, Marcy, my wife. We try to, you know, do things together in the family, and that's, you know, I really enjoy my time with the family. And of course, getting to see Alexandra Moore here in Montreal, and I've got a granddaughter coming, will be great. So that's the second passion. I guess third is ski touring, skiing in general. I just really big into skiing, and I'm trying to develop some, you know, biking and swimming.
You're listening to the CO Series. I'm Carl Moore from McGill University. And today I'm speaking with John McCall McBain, the new chancellor of McGill University. Do you ever calm down? Like, do you ever just, like, it just seems like you'd be active all the time. Do you ever have times where you take a few hours and just...
Yeah, you know, I do read and I do take time. I you know, I am very, like, for example, I do certain things to not exacerbate this issue of being very active. So I don't drink coffee. I've totally cut caffeine. You know, try not to take, you know, too much sugar, like Coca-Cola or something to get me too excited. Yeah. I never take a Red Bull or anything.
Yeah.
So I have to be careful. I have a lot of energy and it's scary for other people because they, you know, they can't really, and as I guess it's a natural thing. It was lucky, you know, when I was a kid, it's a very personal story, but it's an interesting story. When I was a child, from about 3 years old till about 12 or 13 years old, every night when I went to bed, I'd jump up and down on my bed for like 1 to 2 hours to tire myself out to be able to go to sleep. And I sort of thought every kid did that. And when I graduated from Harvard Business School, I had all my friends around. We were having this big dinner. And my dad was at the end of the table telling people, said, and then John would jump up and down his bed. And I looked up and said, well, didn't everybody do that? And nobody ever did that. So, you know, I always wonder if I was, you know, born today and was a kid so active, whether it would have put me in some medication. But I never had any medication for that. But I've been able to... sort of a bit harness that energy, and my wife's helpful to say, look, you know, John, you're getting really active here. But I think it helps to have energy is really important in business and in life, and I have enormous amount of energy. I remember when I started my swimming company, that was before they had sort of computers and everything, to do spreadsheets, and so I had to sort of sort the classes, you know, with Mr. Smith's daughter who was in juniors, and she wanted to drive with Henry's son who's an intermediate to Mrs. Jones's house, and I had to figure out the lessons and all that. And so I stayed up three nights in a row to do that, you know, and people get, how did you do that? I can go without sleep for a long time. I don't like to, but I can.
Well, it just, you know, just kind of a gift. You know, you have the energy, it's natural. Don't screw it up by too much coffee and things like that.
Yeah, I never drink coffee. Yeah, never drink coffee. When people say, John, do you want a coffee? I say, think about it. They say, no, we don't want you to have any coffee.
Okay. So, John, what book are you reading right now?
So that's I'm reading an interesting book called Nuclear Folly right now, written by a Russian Harvard professor called Sergei Plukhyov. I can't pronounce his name properly. And it's on the Cuban Missile Crisis. I'm 63. I was born in 1958, February 13th. And I remember when JF Kennedy, you know, John F. Kennedy died in November 1963. And I'd heard a little bit about the Cuban Missile Crisis, and in some of the declassified papers, but also the KGB declassified papers, they were able to take a different look at the Cuban Missile Crisis and how close the world came and why to nuclear folly, as he calls it. And so I'm just going through that book now, and it's quite interesting.
So that's just of intellectual and historic interest, but there's no takeaways for the business. Like, this is just for your mind and to think.
It was interest. It was more an interest. You know, I tend not to read too many business books. I read books. I'm big into John Grisham, for example. I read all his books.
Yeah, I just finished his latest.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
I should have brought it and given. Well, you can afford it, but you know.
No, I read a lot of John Grisham, but I try to read, you know, fairly widely, and I know I have to take more time to read. I do like reading. It's one of the, not a passion yet, but it's something I do like to take time with.
It's kind of weird. You're going to be a grandfather.
I am a grandfather now, actually. I have a grandson, Theo, who's just turned 2 in June.
Okay.
Unable to see him for his second birthday because of COVID. He was living in the United Kingdom. I was unable to go there. But my daughter's having a little granddaughter in October, so I'll be...
So you're already used to the idea of being a granddad.
Yes, I am. Yeah, I am.
So how different are your children from one another? Like, do you see anything where there's a bit of you or their mother in it, or is it just all over the map?
No, I think each of the kids... You learn... I mean, as a father and a mother, you learn that each kid is different, and I have five different children, and it's great, you know, it provides diversity and in the family and different ideas, and you can't, you know, this working with each of the children is different, how you approach different questions of them. So they're all very different.
Montreal is a city of festivals next year, and it was a couple of years ago. The F1, the Jazz Festival, the Comedy Festival, et cetera, et cetera. What's your favorite festival in Montreal that you're looking forward to next year?
Yeah, I'm looking forward to the Just Pour Rire, the Just for Laughs. I've never been to it. For some reason, I've never been able to go to it. I think when I was in Montreal, probably couldn't afford, didn't take the time to go. And haven't come back to Montreal in the summer. We spent a lot of time in Vancouver in the summer. I really want to go to the Just for Laughs. I've seen a lot of their things on television, but I've never gone to one, so I'd love to do that. I'm not a big jazz person, but I'd love to go to that festival. And I'm not a real F1 fan.
What's your favorite restaurant in Montreal? What is the one that you really love going to?
That's a tough question. I mean, recently we had a few friends over, went to dinner at Milos. I love Milos on Park Avenue. For lunch, L'Express on Saint-Denis, I think is the two. But Le Moiseux is a great place. I don't know if they're still around now after I've gone to Le Serpent. This is some great rest. There's some great rest. I love Montreal. It's a fantastic town. You're so lucky, Carl, to live here. And I'm glad my daughter's here.
That's great. John, thanks for the time today. This is the CEO Series. John, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you, Carl.
We'd also like to thank our technical producer, Marco Campagna. Thank you for tuning in to the CEO Series. À la prochaine.